although the word genius is in the title and it comes up throughout the book, it's not the main focus in a way. The main focus really is that these moments of discovery can happen at such different ages, and that we shouldn't lose hope that just because we're not a prodigy or a teenage, you know, miracle kid, that doesn't mean that there's still not something coming.
That's Claudia Kalb, and I'm Dan Skinner. This is Conversations. Claudia Kalb is an award-winning author and journalist who reports on health, science, and human behavior. She's the author of the New York Times bestseller, Andy Warhol Was a Hoarder, Inside the Minds of History's Great Personalities, as well as a series of cover stories for National Geographic on the origins of genius. She joins us to talk about the book, Spark, How Genius Ignites from Child Prodigies to Late Bloomers. Claudia, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Before we discuss the book itself, tell us about how you became interested in this topic.
Well, it really started with a first book that I published in 2016, which was about the sort of psychological conditions of 12 iconic figures, from Andy Warhol to Charles Darwin. I got interested in the mind and how it works and why some people who are great in terms of their achievements also sometimes have struggles. And when researching that and also researching genius for a series of magazine stories for National Geographic, I discovered just this whole area of fascinating work in creativity and imagination and grit, resilience, luck, sort of all the elements that make up great achievement. And I decided that it would be interesting to look at when people have those moments from prodigies all the way to late bloomers.
Tell us about this book. What are readers going to find here?
So they're going to find a series of biographies, and they start with prodigies that include Picasso, Shirley Temple, and Yo-Yo Ma, and then go through the age as it increases, Bill Gates, Isaac Newton, Sarah Blakely in their 20s, and then to sort of midlifers, Julia Child, Maya Angelou, Alexander Fleming, people who made discoveries in their 40s and 50s, and then on to what I call the late bloomers, Eleanor Roosevelt, Peter Roget of Roget's Thesaurus, and Grandma Moses, who's sort of the quintessential late blooming artist. So it's a series of all of these biographies are linked in the sense that you go from a young age to a much older age, and you see how that person uncovers their passion, sort of has their moment of discovery.
So the book is organized according to that point in life, which the people you profile exhibited those traits, which we would call genius.
Yes, it's when this happens. So a prodigy, for example, like Yo-Yo Ma, who started playing the cello at the age of 4 and had a father who is a musician and taught him, a mother who was a singer. And so they cultivated this musical life in him. He becomes an unbelievably talented performer at a very early age. And then you compare that with somebody like Julia Child, for example, who really had no idea what she wanted to do even in college. And only at the age of 37, by chance, she goes to France with her husband, who has a job there, and has her first meal in a French restaurant, and is just overcome with the experience and decides to go into cooking and launches the French Chef TV show at the age of 50.
You cover 13 people in this book. You highlight those people. Tell us about the research that went into this book.
The research was great. I mean, I love delving into old historical records in some cases, but in this case, also getting to talk to some family members. I interviewed Shirley Temple's son and one of her daughters. I went to visit Isaac Newton's house where he fled during the plague in the 1600s and where he sort of came up with his big ideas initially in terms of gravity and optics, and was able to see his bedroom where he worked and thought and looked out the window and saw the apple tree garden. And then, you know, went and for Julia Child, I was curious, how do you make a meal by Julia Child? So I went to a cooking class that was a tribute to her and learned how to make beef bourguignon, one of her specialties. So all those experiences, going to see the house where Grandma Moses lived and where now her great-grandson lives, who's also, his name is Will Moses, is a folk artist. So it was a lot of on-site, fortunately, before the pandemic hit, seeing some of these places of genius, I would say, or places of inspiration, and talking to family members and getting a sense of the person through them. It was a lot of fun. Even Picasso's grandchildren and one of Eleanor Roosevelt's one of her grandsons really gave me a wonderful window into their lives. And then I also mixed that with science. So I'm interested in kind of the aging and creativity, for example, or prodigies and how that brain works. So it's a blend of biography and science.
So based on the research you've done, what does your book have to say about nature versus nurture when it comes to genius?
Right. Well, that's a huge question. And you often hear people say, well, that person just had this innate ability or talent. Or you hear somebody say, well, that, you know, anybody can do that if they just practice enough. And there's a lot of interesting research in this area, pretty much looking at those questions. I think after researching the practice versus sort of talent argument, you know, it seems that almost everything is going to be a combination of nature and nurture. There's very little in our DNA that directs us in one way only. Genes are affected by environment, and that environment could be your teachers, the people who cultivate your early talent, could be where you live and who you're born to. If you're in poverty, you're going to struggle versus if you're somewhere where you have art lessons around the corner. So, you know, when I looked at all the research, I think it's pretty clear it's always going to be a combination. I think some of the research I looked at in prodigies, you hear about, you know, in art, for example, there are kids who really show an ability to draw in a realistic way very early in life that's different from other kids. And it shows up in a very profound way. And so you can't think that this child has been taught that necessarily, that sort of seems to be a characteristic that shows up. But then, you know, all of these people that I profile, every one of them worked toward their goal, whatever it was, or their subject matter, even the prodigies. You have to work to succeed. And so that's often what Maya Angelou would often say. I hate it when people say, you write, it must be so easy, you write so beautifully. And she always would, you know, think to herself, they have no idea how hard this is.
So I'm wondering, taken from what you just said, I might dedicate myself to the practice of something, and I might achieve some proficiency, but without also a little bit of that nature or whatever that magic ingredient is, I'm not going to become a genius at that. So I'm wondering what the takeaway is from all these people you talked to and the history you studied about. What have you learned from them that we can apply to our lives? Not to necessarily try to become a genius, but to be more creative or, you know, do a better job at what we want to do.
Right. I love that question. And I think ultimately that's the goal of learning about all of these people in the book. You know, I think one thing that all of them have in common is something called openness to experience. So the ability to want to try new things. And it doesn't necessarily mean you have to be the biggest risk taker jumping off a mountain or whatever that might be, but to be open to experiences that aren't necessarily in your area of interest, even crossing over different subject matter. So for example, Leonardo da Vinci, who I write about also in the book, he's somebody who not only was interested in botany and anatomy, but also physics and theater and language. And he was, you know, sort of learning through jumping around to different subjects and kind of figuring out how they connected. So I think an openness to experience, Yo-Yo Ma talks about that a lot. Also, his life as a musician, when it was time to go to college, he decided he wasn't going to go to Juilliard, where he naturally would have studied full time. He wanted to go to a college. He ended up at Harvard, but a place where he could learn about other things. He studied sociology and anthropology, and it really shaped his life because it doesn't corner you into just one thing. Other things I would say, take notes and be really observant, because a lot of times we forget things and, you know, everybody has really interesting ideas. And I think we often don't remember them or toss them aside and think they're not interesting enough. And I think all of these people were note takers and people who really had some confidence that their ideas might mean something and worked really hard. That's the other thing. Productivity is a huge element of success. And that's true for a genius, but also true for any of us. The more you work at something and the more you produce, the more likely you're going to have a big hit. And that's true from scientific research. So I think for people to know that even if they have failures, which is also a huge element of success, that you will have failures, and not to be discouraged by those failures, but to use them as experience and a way to learn how to launch yourself to the next effort. Because productivity goes with failure. It's going to be a lot of failures along the way. And then you have the moment that where you really have a success. And I think, you know, one of the things I also try to stress in the book is that although the word genius is in the title and it comes up throughout the book, it's not the main focus in a way. The main focus really is that these moments of discovery can happen at such different ages and that we shouldn't lose hope that just because we're not a prodigy or a teenage, you know, miracle kid, that doesn't mean that there's still not something coming.
Why don't you expand on this a little bit more? The idea of being open to new experiences that maybe outside your normal realm. For example, maybe you're an engineer and you visit an art museum. And even though those two things might seem on the surface unrelated, you might come away with some new ideas from that experience.
Yes, exactly. I mean, I've found myself now telling people and telling myself to, you know, seek out something that you're not necessarily interested. So if you're an engineer, go see that art exhibit. If you're a scientist, read fiction, because you find that people really are sparked by at times when they're not in their element. You know, it's and also, you know, at times when they're taking a break from their subject matter. So I think seeking out new experiences, Yo-Yo Ma went to Africa to study music of the Bushmen, and it opened his idea of music change, because there they were playing music not in concert halls, but just out in the environment. You know, learn about things that are beyond your capacity. Eleanor Roosevelt went down into the mines, you know, to see what mining was like so that she could really understand what miners went through. And all of these people in some way sought that out. And so I think, and also taking breaks, I think that's important too, to get away and literally take walks in the woods. A lot of the ideas that people have come at moments of quiet. So don't fill yourself so much constantly with activity that you don't take moments out for respite.
So it sounds like there's value in breaking our routine, whether it's driving a different route to work, maybe walking a different path when we exercise, interacting with different people. Tell us a bit more about that.
Oh, definitely. And, you know, along that same line, I think something I've learned as a journalist over the years and is, you know, really talk to everybody you can, because everybody has a story. And it's amazing when you just ask a couple of questions, what you can learn of somebody, you know, sitting next to somebody on a train, or, you know, walking down the street or buying ice cream from somebody and talk to them, because so often you make connections or they spark something in you that, you know, you think, oh, wow, I never thought of that. So I think all of that can be really, really not only enjoyable, but also instructive.
Let's talk a little bit more about the importance of not being afraid to fail. And I always think of Thomas Edison when I think about that, because he said, I haven't failed. When he was trying to invent the light bulb, he said, I discovered thousands of things that don't work.
Absolutely. Failure is so critical to success and, you know, keeping productive. And you know, the more you do, the more you fail, but you also succeed. And I remember interviewing a researcher in the cancer field named Judah Folkman. And it was really a profound experience for me, because he was a leading researcher in cancer research. And I went into his conference area and he showed me, as we were talking about his successes, he turned and said, you need to look at that. And he pointed to this long row of reports on a shelf. And he said, those are all the failures. That's all the stuff that didn't work. And that's really important to remember about anything. Sarah Blakely talks a lot about this. And in the chapter in Spark about Sarah Blakely, you know, failure was sort of part of her life. She ran for class president 3 times and didn't make it. She did poorly on the LSATs. She thought she was going to be a lawyer, and she says she failed the LSATs twice. And, you know, ultimately, all of that built her toward her goal and her kind of resilience and her ability to use failure. Her father believed in failure as part of a childhood experience. He thought it was important to use failure as a way to learn how to do the next thing. And so that's another thing people really should be reassured by, that you're, you know, the more you do, the more you potentially fail, but the more you also have your moment of success.
Claudia, there's much more in this book that we didn't have time to talk about. We just scratched the surface, but what do you hope that readers will take away from it?
I really hope that learning about the lives of these individuals, who are both some of them living today and some of them sort of historical icons, will give people a sense of these different areas, you know, from art and music to science and politics, how somebody crafts a life, how a life journey develops, and how sometimes, you know, prodigies can be admired and people can strive, you know, for their children to be them. But really, often experience is the thing that propels discovery at midlife or later. And so the ultimate message would be, don't have a sort of expiration date on your creativity or your ingenuity. Leave it open. Don't limit yourself.
The book is Spark: How Genius Ignites from Child Prodigies to Late Bloomers by Claudia Kalb. Claudia, thank you very much for talking with me today.
Oh, thank you so much. It's been wonderful to be here.
You'll find more interviews on a wide variety of topics at kansaspublicradio.org/conversations. You can use the KPR app to listen on your phone or tablet. You can sign up for the Conversations podcast on iTunes. And you'll also find us on Facebook. Conversations is a production of Kansas Public Radio. I'm Dan Scunner. Thanks for listening.